Hello, and welcome to Friends for Life, a podcast of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's National Mission. We're here to come alongside you as we journey through life under the cross. What does it look like to care for our neighbors in body and soul? How do we tend to our own body and soul? How can we speak up for life? And finally, how do we share the faith with the next generation? Join us as we have these conversations and learn together. We hope you'll stick around and be our friends for life.
Thanks so much for joining us. I'm your host, Steph Nugebauer, here with my co-host, the Reverend Andy Becker. We welcome today Pastor Brian Davies. Brian, welcome. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be with you and those who are listening. I am a child of God. Thanks be to God for that. I'm a husband. I'm a father. I'm a pastor of a local congregation in north suburbs of Chicago. And I'm also chaplain for two area fire departments, which is a unique vocation. And then I also wrote two books through the excellent folks at Concordia Publishing House. And with their help, they've helped me get that language and message out. And I'm honored to be with you all today.
That's awesome, Brian. Thanks so much for joining us. Just want to start out talking a little bit about one of the topics of one of your books, and that's with community. So what's God's vision for his people living together in community?
I've heard it said that like once you see the Bible through a certain lens, you never unsee it that way, you know? And so I started looking at the Bible through the lens of community a little while ago, and I'll tell you why in just a minute. But first, let's just track the concept of community in the Bible. From the very beginning in the book of Genesis, God says, hey, it's not a good idea for you to be alone. And he intentionally created male and female to be together. Like, hey, I don't think you're going to make it by yourself, so let me give you one another from the very beginning. Then after that, God, remember, puts his people in tribes. Why? Because, hey, you got to be in a body. You got to be with other people. Then we see the New Testament and the mission of Jesus Christ where he sends his disciples out. And think about that. If he's trying to get his message out to these surrounding villages, wouldn't it make sense to cover twice as much territory by sending people out alone? But he intentionally doesn't. Instead, he says, let's cover half the amount of territory, but I want you instead to go out two by two. Incredibly inefficient at first glance, but it's actually not, because Jesus knows we need one another. Then he places us Christians in the church, meaning if you're going to be a follower of Jesus, you got to be with other people. Christianity is not a solo sport, as much as we like to talk about having a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. That is not biblical. Instead, it's, hey, have a relationship with Jesus, but then enter into the church. We are wired for community.
Yeah, so what was the name of that book, Brian, that you wrote, in case our listeners want to check that out?
That first book was called Connected to Christ, Overcoming Isolation Through Community. And I was working on that probably 2018, 2019, came out in 2020. And my buddy's like, holy crap, you launched a book about isolation in the midst of COVID. How did you do that, right? So the timing of that was obviously God's timing. And it just was a call for people to be connected and to be in community.
That's awesome. Thanks.
Well, as an aside, how did you find it so timely, especially for people going through such isolation as the pandemic?
Yeah, well, it started, of course, like a couple years before. I started observing why, as a culture, are we becoming so divided, divisive, antagonistic, tribal, in terms of like, hey, there's an us versus them going on and all the time, and like on every single issue, you got to find out what camp you're in. I started to get really bothered by that. I'm sure you guys are bothered by that. I think our listeners are bothered by that. It's like, what has happened to us? So that started me kind of on the quest to say, boy, God's word actually has a solution for a very secular cultural problem. And so I started looking at it through that lens.
So then why do you feel that God has provided an antidote to isolation in the form of community, whether it's church, his body? How does that solve it in a sense?
Well, I think what happens is when you are alone, your mind starts to do wonders on you. I think things are always worse for me. Well, like when I'm at night and my mind races like by myself and I'm not talking to anybody. The gift of community serves as kind of like, I professor, retired seminary professor Dale Meyer calls these mediating institutions, meaning these entities around us that like regulate us, that keep us in check, that remind us what's true. So I think we need other people to point us to Jesus, to point us to truth, to point us to the gift of one another. And I think we see that best when we're around others.
So you're talking a little bit about some of those effects that can happen to us. I mean, we see how isolation can affect our own personal relationships, yeah. But what about just flourishing and living according to God's design? How does isolation become detrimental to that endeavor as well?
Yeah, I think when we find ourselves lonely, when we find ourselves isolated, I think that's when the evil one does his greatest work. No doubt about it. I think that's when the target from the evil one gets really, really big. Again, our mind races. Things that are level 3 problems become level 7 problems. So I think church work in and of itself can be very lonely and isolating. I'm sure you probably have church workers as listeners. As I'm in dialoguing with church workers, I think you can start to feel like nobody understands what it's like to be me, right? And you start to kind of, every small problem becomes a big problem because you feel alone. God says, hey, I know that. I know what it's like to be alone. Jesus was alone on the cross, right? He endured that for us. But then he says, hey, you don't have to stay that way. Get around other people. Get with the gifts that I have provided for you, and that's the gift of one another.
I think one of the most comforting passages for me when I consider community is actually Psalm 23, and then in the Gospels when Christ talks about himself being the good shepherd, and to think of the church as a flock and the dangers that one sheep encounters when it's alone versus in a
that's right.
flock. And not only are they, you know, together, so larger than the adversary, but then they also have the shepherd protecting, guiding them, keeping them even through the valley of the shadow of death. And I think that's just so beautiful to think about us as sheep in that sense of community.
Totally true.
So, Brian, this might seem really obvious to us now, especially because there's been books and studies done about, you know, social media and the smartphone and actually the kind of drawbacks that all of that brings. But the general thought maybe 10, 20 years ago was that technology would decrease isolation and create these stronger social networks. That's why we have things that came up like Facebook when it started at the very beginning. But how have the newest studies or statistics about, well, social media and smartphone use shown that this kind of social technology might actually hinder community in its truest sense?
Yeah, Steph, great question. There's so much I want to say about that, but I want to honor the fact that your podcast has a time limit. So I'm going to do my best to limit myself. I heard a quote the other day that said, generally speaking, the more technological something is, the more alone it likely is. Which, as I thought about that, I'm like, holy cow, that is so true. Where as technology increases, it is splintering us off like crazy. And then think about, what is it that actually brings us together? A campfire. Well, that's like the most fundamental, rudimentary thing that human beings do, right? Is sitting around a campfire. That is the least technological event. And by the way, speaking of community, there's something about sitting around a campfire that actually builds community, doesn't it? Like, you're sitting around, there's nothing really distracting. You're all kind of looking at one thing, but experiencing it and just talking and sharing stories and memories together. A board game does the same thing, right? I was with my in-laws and extended family last night, and we got out of board game and started playing, and nobody ran from the table. Of course, we were checking our phones here and there, but like more than that, we were together, which is great. I do want to say that we should not just say all technology equals bad, because it's simply not true. I mean, I think of a member of our community where I live who's got a daughter with a very rare genetic neurological disorder. Probably no one else in Grays Lake has that disorder besides this family. Pre-technology, they'd had to get on the phone or write letters to be able to connect with other families. Now they can have Zoom calls and share problems. No one else understands what they're going through except them. In that respect, community is doing a great job through technology of bringing people, or technology is doing a great job of forming community. Generally speaking, though, I think we can all agree it's doing more harm than good. And I think individuals, families need to be aware that when we're going towards technology, it's more likely than not going to lead to loneliness. Think about it like the TV in the home used to be somewhat of a mediating institution, meaning the family had to agree on what to watch.
Yeah.
Now it's very conceivable that three people in a home, four people in a home, five people in a home can all be absorbing and different forms of entertainment. And then there you go, you don't really communicate about it. You don't laugh together. You don't process it together. And so I think bottom line, it's not a good. Recognize there is some good, but I think recognize that to experience community, it's likely going to mean putting the technology away.
So to be fair, lest people listening think that we're harping on these younger generations of kids who are glued to their phone, adults also have very similar problems with technology. So this isn't just speaking to kids only. We've mentioned social media and the smartphone. Maybe a simple solution would be to decrease the amount of time we spend, put our smartphones in a basket at certain time at night. No smartphones at the supper table or when we're doing these communal things like sitting around a bonfire or playing board games, what have you. So we've already touched on before in previous podcasts kind of some ways to be smarter about technology. But in addition to technology, which may seem like the obvious one to listeners, what other situations drive people to isolation?
Yeah, and that's a great, you got a great list there, Steph, and I would fully affirm that. I would also say, rather than playing defense as a family or an extended family, play offense, meaning that like, hey, recognize, let's actually plan, because our default is going to be to sit on the couch and look at our phones. Let's proactively, offensively make a plan to do something that doesn't involve technology and say, hey, we're just going to do this for 1 hour and we're going to do it together. We're going to put our phones away and we're going to experience this, because I think like cold turkey might not work, but like, hey, 1 hour we can play a game for it, right? So I guess that would be kind of my first thought, would be like, make sure that you're making a plan and having a strategy and putting that into practice.
Just kind of an aside to that, or a thought with that too, as you were talking, and just knowing that your other book was about conversations and listening.
Yeah,
those seem to go hand in glove as you think about creating space and time. If we're not taking time to listen, if we're not taking time to have conversations because we're just glued to our devices.
Right. Steph, you asked like, hey, other things to be done. Like, I just started noticing, Steph. Andy, I think you shared this. Hey, my kids are getting older, so I'm spending a lot of time running them from place to place. I am too. I got like a senior, a sophomore in high school, and then a seventh grader. So I spend a lot of time like standing with parents outside of practices waiting for my kids to get out, right? And that used to be a time where parents would socialize, right? And now, unfortunately, it's people like on their smartphones just waiting. And so like, part of the genesis of the second book was like, how do we actually put conversations to practice in order to actually build community? Because unfortunately, our conversation and our listening skills have decreased for a couple of reasons. Number one, our leaders don't model good listening skills anymore. They model yelling really well. They model down talking really well. If you turn on the news, you'll see people yelling at one another, fighting. So we think that what gets high results on cable news networks is going to get high results at the Thanksgiving table. It's not. Okay. We don't want to employ those strategies. So we've actually got to learn to practice having civil conversations again. And the second book really kind of builds off the first a little bit, which is, how do we actually do this? And it starts with asking thoughtful questions, because as maybe you guys have both heard this, but guess how many questions Jesus asks in his earthly ministry? Over 300. This is the person who's really literally got all the answers, but instead of spending his time on earth telling everyone the answer, he spends his time on earth asking a lot of questions. And so I think we could take a cue from that. And so the book really describes, what's it look like to be someone who asks really good questions? Questions like, what's it like to be you these days? Because questions like, hey, how you doing? What are you going to get? Fine. Fine, by the way, stands for feelings inside not expressed, because people don't feel like talking, right? So let's ask better questions to have better conversations and really.
No, I love that, Brian. That's great. And you're talking about our leaders. And so just back to that kind of social isolation a little bit, you know, sometimes people are afraid to bring up certain topics, including politics. And so how can politics lead to social isolation maybe now in a way that they never have in previous years? And how does this awareness change the way we approach these topics?
Yeah, I don't have all the answers on that one. I think it's going to be very contextual. I think it is not inappropriate to set a boundary that we're just not going to talk about politics right now, as an extended family say. I don't think that that's a bad rule. I don't think we have to talk about what's happening 850 miles away in Washington, D.C. when we gather as an extended family. Let's talk about what's happening in our homes. Let's talk about what's happening in our lives, because let's not bring up something that might cause disagreement. I guess I'm just saying, like, hey, I think it's okay to leave that one out, because unfortunately that is such a polarizing issue that I'm saying, hey, I think it's okay to put that one on the back burner for now. Let's talk about things that we can all enjoy talking about together.
Or maybe it's simply that's a better conversation to have one-on-one with someone. When you have the time to really talk about something and be thoughtful about your questions and trying to understand their point of view too. So maybe it's just not a large group topic.
Agreed.
When you're together for, you know, a very short amount of time to celebrate something.
Right, so, right.
Not a bad rule.
And like when families don't get a chance to gather that much anymore, like because everyone's so busy, like let's not let this one get hijacked.
Yeah, and sometimes it may be asking questions, Brian. Maybe it's asking the right questions before you're all together with that one-on-one conversation, just to talk about that ahead of time, so it doesn't have to be a landmine when you get together.
Yeah, I think we're just living in an era where, I mean, I would say when I grew up, I felt like I was the only person that cared about politics. Like I was a 16-year-old kid. I tape recorded the State of the Union speeches because I loved it. I was like a political geek, and I couldn't believe that none of my friends wanted to talk about it because I loved it. Now I feel like 30 years later, I'm like, I wish everyone would stop talking about it, right? Because it's become such an unfortunate deal. So I guess my hope would be that we're able to build bridges where we can build bridges that really builds community with people. Because unfortunately, that's an issue that is so we're up against. Like, for example, I visited one of my homebound folks not too long ago. And I see this in a number of homes where like cable TV is like a constant companion on in the home. And like it's on. I said, do you listen to that a lot? Do you watch that a lot? She's like, oh, not much, like 6 to 7 hours a day. And I'm like, whoa. I'm like, can you imagine getting 6 to 7 hours of bad news constantly being fed at you all day? Like, no wonder levels of stress and level of anxiety are through the roof, because we're not meant to absorb that much bad news, right? So like if we're picking a topic like politics and we're up against people who have been getting 6 to 7 hours of bad news about that topic, normally just one-sided, of course, they're going to have a lot of things to say about it.
So far, we've talked about topics or issues that kind of we thrust on ourselves to force us further into isolation, like technology, you know, smartphone use, just looking down at our own screens. Maybe the subject of politics comes up and it forces us to remove ourselves from relationships. Sometimes isolation rather is pushed on us when we're not wanting it to be. And I'm thinking of, when there's a death in the family, when someone loses a spouse, when you're in the so-called sandwich generation, when you feel isolated because not only are you caring for your kids at home, but you're also caring for your aging parents. What about families with children with disabilities? I mean, there's certainly circumstances like this that kind of force isolation on people. And so with these circumstances, what do you have to say for them? What kind of comfort, what kind of encouragement, what would Jesus have them know in their isolation?
Yeah. First, I would say, I read a book a number of years ago. I think his name was Tim Brackett. And bottom line, you see the title of the book is called Permission to Feel. It was a dynamite book. Basically, it was inviting readers to actually start to name and understand what their feelings actually are. Because I think, unfortunately, the first thing that happens is when something like you described, Steph, that happens to you, the loss of a spouse, loss of a job, some like traumatic event that happens, you're feeling so many emotions that you don't even know what they are, right? And so you kind of muddy them all up. They become a big plate of emotional spaghetti and you can't really sort through it. And then what happens, my experience would be both with myself and with others, is that because you're not feeling great, you don't want to go anywhere. You don't want to be in community. You don't want to be around other people. Your default is like, I just want to hide. I want to turn the lights off. I want to be entertained and distracted, or I want to self-medicate in an unhealthy way and just get out of the feelings I'm feeling. So understand, like, hey, even though I'm not feeling like I want to go to this experience, this is actually the medicine I need. And so, of course, I'm a pastor. I'm going to argue the best thing to do when you're feeling these things, when these things are happening to you, is get yourself around other people, get yourself around other Christians who can speak God's word to you. And then finally, get yourself receiving the gifts that God has designed to be the very medicine that will help you in that hour. And that is God's word and the gift of his body and blood. We're designed to need that. We're wired for that. That's the very thing that we need. Quick example of that. I had a trip planned on a Sunday afternoon. So I was going to do church and then get out of town to do something I need to take care of. Saturday night after midnight, I wake up and, ooh, my house just feels a little cold. Like the furnace isn't running. I discovered there's a furnace problem. I know nothing about HVAC, but I'm like, let me go down and look at the furnace. There's no hope that I could fix it, right? But let me look at it. Maybe looking at it will fix it. Bottom line, my furnace isn't running. It's Sunday morning. I have to go do church. I feel awful about the fact that I'm leaving my wife and kids with a furnace that's not working, but I have to do this travel, okay? So at that moment, the only reason my selfish self is going to church is because it's work, right? I'm a pastor. I can't not show up at church. I have to go to church. But I will tell you, my selfish self, the last thing I wanted was to go to church. I had bigger fish to fry, right? I was anxious, nervous. I felt guilty about leaving my family, and I had a big problem. My furnace wasn't working. I will tell you, after being at church during the 8 o'clock service, even though it was work for me, that was exactly what I needed. I sang hymns that reminded me that God was there for me, that God was going to see me through this, that God was going to find a way for it. I talked to some people there that I love, that cared for me in the midst of this trauma, quote unquote, that I was experiencing. So sometimes even when you don't like feel like you want it, that's the very thing you need to get.
Well, I think that thankfully there are some really wise mental health experts that will also say that rumination is only going to lead to further isolation.
Yeah.
And so rather than ruminating on self, the idea is to think of others and then to be around others.
Yep.
And so even if that's not from a Christian standpoint, what the church is saying here is that we have something that you need.
Absolutely.
And you don't want to go without it.
I love it when secular culture backs itself into biblical truth, right? Where like secular culture pretends to like, hey, we found something. And the church is like, hey, we've known that all along, you know, and that's a great example of it, right? Don't ruminate. Don't let like the evil one play games with you while you're alone. Get in a group. Get back in the way I've designed it to be.
Yeah, I've noticed that as a parish pastor before coming to work at my current job, that too often people, when they had something traumatic happen, would just their first instinct would be to back away, like you're talking about, and wanted to get themselves right first, or wanted to feel right again, and just. And so as we look at our lives because of Jesus, what does Christ, the fact that he has conquered death, that he's risen, that he's returning, how does that give us a new perspective on community and a new way to pursue relationships with others?
Yeah, I just think about how important it is for the Christian who's living in the United States in year 2025 or 2026, or really whenever now, like recognizing how secular the age is that we're living in right now. Like, I think we take it for granted because, like, the pot's boiling and it's always been boiling since we've been born, right? But think about it, there was eras in the world history where, like, we were predominantly in the Christian world getting Christian messages. We're not, right? We're living in a post-Christian America where a lot of our media is not Christian in nature. Like, our workplaces or our public schools are designed to be religious-free zones. So we're just not getting religious messaging from God, truth from God, downloaded into our life every day. So we've got to be proactive about it. It means we've got to pursue it. We've got to seek it out, because otherwise it's not going to passively come to us. So that's why the Christian needs to be very active and proactive about availing themselves to the gift of God from the time they wake up in the morning, throughout their day, through the end of their day, acknowledging, God, you are God. You're on your throne. I acknowledge who you are. I worship you. My life is for you. And receiving the gifts and truth that he gives us through his word, that's written down or spoken to us or sung to us in Christian music or spoken by other Christians that we talk to on the phone or we text message and encourage one another. Those are all ways in which we let God's gift of community come to us, and we all need it.
I think a really hopeful image too is of the new Jerusalem, the new heavens and the new earth, where we will dwell with one another as a big giant family. There will be no more tears. There will be no isolation. There will be no burdens, depression, looking inward on ourselves. We get to enjoy each other. And so to kind of cast that vision for the future, and we're playing the long game here. This is what we're hoping for. This is our goal. And it allows us to see our neighbors right now, family, friends, our children, as people who we get to spend eternity with.
Absolutely.
And so to cast that vision again for community is eternal.
Yeah. And you asked that initial question about how we're wired for community. Like, to me, the best way to think about heaven is to think about Genesis 1 and 2, right? Where, like, men and women lived together without sin, but they were together, right? And that gets broken with sin in Genesis 3. We get blame and hiding and antagonism and battle that gets tried to get back to throughout creation and even still today, but we're broken. But you're right, Steph, like, Revelation gives us a beautiful vision of, hey, one day every tribe, tongue, nation gathers together. We're going to be in community with everybody, and all these labels that divide us and the tribalism, imagine that. We're going to be done with that completely, because we're all going to be, you know, at the feet of the Lamb, worshiping him for what he's done and accomplished for us.
Amen. Thank you so much for joining us today, Brian. You mentioned your second book. Can you tell us the title of that too?
Yeah, that one's called Captivating Conversations, How Christians Can Reclaim the Lost Art of Listening.
Ooh, that sounds great too. So your first one is Connected to Christ, Overcoming Isolation Through Community, and you can find those at CPH. So thank you so much for joining us, for being our guest today, and for sharing your wisdom with us.
Steph, Andy, great to talk to you guys. God bless your work and your work in your homes as family members and leaders in your homes, but also your work in God's church as well. Thanks so much.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you liked what you heard, please leave us a review and don't forget to click the follow or subscribe button so you don't miss out on upcoming episodes. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at LCMS Life. And finally, listeners, we want to hear from you. Do you have an idea about a guest you'd like to hear from or a topic you want talked about? Email us at friendsforlife@lcms.org. We want to hear from you about what you want to hear about when it comes to issues of life. Thank you.
for joining us. Friends for Life is a podcast that discusses the life God has given and the people He has called you to serve, right where you are in God's mission.